Good morning.
Good morning.
It is good to be here this morning. Hope you enjoyed your holiday and thanks for coming to worship with us this morning. My name is Dave Clements and I serve as the intern minister, not interim, but intern. And I am joined today by Lisa Teal, our worship associate, Hal Walker, our director of music, and Lily Rappaport, our director of religious education.
Oh, won't you tiptoe to the auction? It's an auction like you've never seen. It's a starry, starry universe where we'll be. I will buy you a vegan dinner. You'll be a winner in a tie-dye shirt. So tiptoe to the auction with me. I'll buy a basket of Cabernet and some cheese to take away, my dear, to the starry, starry universe with you. I will bid on pretty paintings and a massage for you, my dear, when you tiptoe to the auction with me. Won't you tiptoe to the auction? We would love to spend a fortune. You get to see our lovely Jennifer at the starry, starry universe. So won't you tiptoe to the auction with me?
Thank you, thank you.
Main fundraisers for the church, and so please plan to attend. If you can't attend, buy some tickets or bid on some items. I direct you to the thread from the web where you'll find other announcements. And again, I welcome you after the service. Lisa and I are more than willing to meet you at the back of the sanctuary. With humility and courage, born of our common story, we are called as Unitarian Universalists to build the beloved community where all souls are welcome as blessings and the human family lives whole and reconciled. With this vision in our hearts and minds, we light our chalice.
I'd like to sing this opening song this morning in honor of a woman named Mary Sheridan, who I heard recently passed away from cancer. She was an art teacher in Pickerington, Ohio, at Tusing Elementary School, and she had a real passion for the environment and for the arts. And she Tusing Elementary School was built fairly recently on the old Tusing farm, halfway between Pickerington and Reynoldsburg. And Mary was so interested in teaching the children about the environment that used to be in this place on this farm that was now taken over by this development. And she created with the students a little nature area at the school, and she invited me. They had a sister school in Barrow, Alaska, and together the school studied the environment of the old environment of Pickerington, Ohio, and the environment of Barrow, Alaska. So this is a story about the school getting together to build a 20-foot sculpture of a whale's tail in the pond that they created outside of the school. So here's the story. This is the first part of the story. Halfway from Pickerington all the way to Reynoldsburg, there was a farm rolling acres of fields. There was corn and wheat, a swamp and a stream, and it all made a home for the animals and trees. And the whale swims free in the ocean. Well, I was a child on the earth just a few years ago. Me and my family were moving to find us a home in a town that was willing to grow. Mom and Dad bought a house right above Tusing Road, and the whale swims free in the ocean. Well, the stores and the houses grew up, and the farm was torn down. Big city lights came closer and closer. The sound all around was the change of our town. And a new school was built on the old fertile ground. And the whale swims free in the ocean. Well, my friends and I grew in our homes and in our Tusing school. We became a family in the old-fashioned way that we do. Me and you, living good, right, and true. But we wondered where had all the birds gone and the other animals too. And the whale swims free in the ocean. So we learned about the wildlife that left since the people moved in, made an invitation to come back and join us again. Our working hands put some love in the land, and we sang to the birds, tell the world of our plan. And the whale swims free in the ocean. From 1,000 miles away came the call of an old humpback whale, coming to the end of a long life of swimming in style. She would die in the form of a tale, and forever she would be a teacher of the ways of the whale. So she started swimming home to Ohio.
Listening is soul work. It can help the living find the meaning to go on in the midst of trying circumstances, and it can help the dying accept the brevity of their lives. Without listening, there can be no story. And without stories, we cannot complete the unfinished work of healing.
Well, I think it's no surprise what's in my box this morning. Pens. What can we do with pens? We can write down words. That gives me an idea of the story for today, called Six Word Memoirs. Well, legend has it that Ernest Hemingway was challenged in a bet to write a whole novel in just 6 words. The result? For sale, baby shoes never worn. Apparently, he thought it was his greatest work. It's brilliant, it's gripping, it's provocative, it's powerful, and it proves that you don't have to prattle on and on and on to tell a good story. Short, sweet, complete. Brevity is in. About 10 years ago, a journalist named Larry Smith issued the challenge to encapsulate your life in a 6-word memoir. He partnered with, at that time, a little-known company called Twitter, and he challenged what was supposed to be a one-month challenge for people to write in their 6-word memoirs. Well, that challenge brought in so many people's stories from all over the world. Those words were an attempt to tell the whole life story, and you could think about it as if it were an autobiograph, an autobiography, or an epitaph on your grave, on your tombstone. And it quickly became a phenomenon. All people from around the world were chiming in, and the New York Times issued a book of some of those 6-word memoirs, and it was called Not Quite What I Was Planning. But it was a collection of the memoirs from all over, from the rich and from the not so rich. I have some of my favorites here. Life is funny. It's no joke. Writer's block, story of my life. One night, and 9 months later. We'll sing and dance for love. Longed for him, got him, darn. Found on Craigslist, table, apartment, husband. 6 words are worth 1,000 pictures. Now, people wrote in some great memoirs because of the limit, not in spite of it. And these tales can be very fascinating, and even those that were told by children. Now, there was a, at Thanksgiving, there were some families who went around and they told their stories about Thanksgiving in 6 words, and some of them came up, "Thankful I'm not a turkey. Why do calories taste so good? Eat till asleep, sleep till eat. You all strengthen me, thank you." So priests and rabbis understand the essence of these short, complete sentences. You can have faith to answer these complex questions in the world. And even suicide prevention centers and speed dating centers, they were catalysts for communications to create small, short, sweet sentences, sparks for self-expression, and it's a great way to break the ice. 6 words can take you on a life all its own. And even teenagers, in classrooms, this challenge has been going on. Teachers have been giving their classrooms the challenge to write 6 words. And teenagers are really wonderful, too. "Mom just revoked my creative license." "We're the family you gossip about." And even this challenge was put out to the elementary school third graders. And we have some Zen poets, Zen masters coming from this group. "Life is better in soft pajamas." Isn't that true? So once you get started, it's kind of addicting. You can ask yourself, what's my story? What can I say about my life in just 6 words? Well, that's the challenge that we're going to put out to you today. Can you tell your life story in just 6 words? You each have a little piece of post-it inside your program. And the challenge is out to you. If you could sum your life up in just 6 words, what would those words be? And today you'll have a chance during the service to ponder that. And we have pens up here that I'll be happy to distribute on the way back. But during the service today, take some moments and write down what your 6 words would be. Oh, during the offertory, there'll be a basket that goes around and you can add your sentence there, and we're going to put it together in a big book. I don't see the big book.
Yeah, the book is out in the choir. And so when the service ends, if all goes well, you'll see your post-it notes on the big book as you leave.
So think, and I'm looking forward to reading all those stories later.
So this month's theme is story, so I thought we'd use a story to lead us into our time of meditation today. So the Buddha is going on a journey with some of his disciples, and they're walking for a long time, and they stop to rest by some rocks, and Buddha asks his youngest disciple, "Would you please fetch me some water? That lake we passed looked really clean." So the disciple dutifully gets up and goes back to the lake they had passed earlier and is very disappointed to find that a bullock cart had just wandered through along the whole shore of the lake and muddied the water. It was not fit for his teacher to drink. So he comes back and reports this to Buddha. And about a half an hour passes and Buddha asks the same disciple, "Please fetch me some water at the lake." And the disciple returns and is disappointed to find that it's still too muddy and unfit for his teacher to drink. So he returns, and sometime later, Buddha asks him one more time, "Please fetch me some water at the lake." And the disciple returns to the lake and is very pleased to find that The mud had settled and the water is clear. He can see all the way to the bottom, so he scoops up a pot of water and brings back to Buddha to drink. And Buddha looks at the water and looks at the disciple and says, "Do you know how you made this water clear? You let it be. Just by letting it rest and giving it time, the mud settled and the water is clear again. And your mind is exactly the same. When you are disturbed, just let it be. Give yourself the opportunity for the mind to settle, and it will."
So the whale begins swimming from Barrow, Alaska to Pickerington, Ohio, following the waterways on that way. And here's the story of the whale's journey to Ohio. "My journey begins in the Arctic Ocean north of Barrow, Alaska. I swim through the Bering Strait into the Bering Sea. From north to south, I'll soar the waters of the Pacific Ocean, through the Panama Canal into the Caribbean Sea, and then north through the Yucatan Channel. I'll swim to the Gulf of Mexico, I'll race to the old Mississippi, and then run to the Ohio. I'm a whale on a journey underneath the sun, and I'm swimming home to Pickerington. A humpback in Ohio, but you never thought you'd see. But I'm on my way, so be looking for me. My journey continues as I move to the mouth of the Scioto River. I swim upstream, Big Walnut Creek. I'm almost home. I turn to the east, Black Lick Creek. Listen close for the gift I'm bringing as I leap through the brook of Old Tusing Farm. You'll hear my song. So people, gather round with your children and bring your grandparents too. You gotta carry me over this portage to the pond in the Tusing School. I'm a whale on a journey underneath the sun, and I'm swimming home to Pickerington. A humpback in Ohio, but you never thought you'd see. But I'm on my way, so be looking for me. I'll see you in February."
I never wanted to be different, although I'm certain that my birth family would tell you another story. They have accused me, literally, of doing or saying something simply because I wanted to be different, because my sole purpose was to shock the people around me. But that is really not true. I can remember lying in bed as a child or teen and thinking to myself, if I could flip a switch and be like everyone else around me, I would do it. It would be infinitely easier if I thought just like them. It had always seemed to me that being alike was where joy and acceptance lay. Instead, I felt like I didn't belong in my family's story. When I would say or do something contrary to the household or the mainstream, my thoughts or actions were dismissed with phrases like, "Oh, that's Lisa, the black sheep of the family," or "the token bleeding heart liberal, the feminist, etc." I felt like an outsider, a footnote, and somewhere along the lines, I concluded that without commonality, you cannot be a part of the main story. Over the past few decades, I found a way to come to terms with these feelings and to coexist peacefully with the extended family, but recently, the old conflict was reignited. Oh no, you see where I'm going. During this year's political primaries, I experienced a singular moment with my extended family. We were all united in finding one candidate so unfit it was laughable. And laugh we did, together, united. It felt really good. In fact, it was almost decadent. But then things changed. When the others realized this candidate was now their only hope, they started backing and, to my shock, defending him. The dividing lines returned, the black sheep was highlighted. I felt once again on the margins. I spent a lot of time reflecting on this in an effort to bring renewed healing. And one of the things I realized is that when I think back to my favorite stories, it's never the commonality of the characters that compels me. It's not the same, but rather the uniqueness, the richness of the breadth of people, the surprise plot twists, the tapestry weaving together the various fibers. For a timely example, I've always loved the Island of Misfit Toys in the Christmas special Rudolph. Everybody seen that? Where would that story be without Charlie in the box, a train with square wheels, or the jelly-squirting water pistol? The diversity is the story, and is also one of the main reasons I was originally drawn to this church, the colorful individuals, as well as the embrace of their differences, the celebration. I had another interesting epiphany during my reflecting. In preparing to tell you my story, shaping my thoughts and putting it to paper, I suddenly just felt freer. Writing down my story created some distance between me and my feelings, and this distance lessened their hold on me and gave me some objectivity, some clarity. As Carl Jung said, until you allow the unconscious to become conscious, it will rise up to you as your life and you will call it your fate. So let us proudly tell our stories and value and appreciate our lively contributions that we add to the stories everywhere we go.
Tell me a story. You know, I remember as a young child, my grandfather, I really loved him because he was the storyteller in our family. And I remember as I would come to him and say, "Gramps, tell me a story," he would reach out his hand, pull me up into his lap. And I would sit there for hours as he talked about life, his visions, his dreams. And it wasn't so much the stories that I remembered, but it was the connection that I felt. I particularly remember recalling a story that he told me that truly gave me some strength at a time in my life when I really needed to be reminded of not being so selfish. And the story he told me as a young child was how he and my grandmother, who loved to garden, would every summer grow extra flowers just so that they could cut them. And every Friday, as whoever seemed to walk by their house, they would give them a bouquet of flowers. And my grandmother particularly liked the expression on their face as they got this gift so freely given without any expectation. And I remembered that act of selfless love, several years later when I found myself in a city all alone on Christmas Day. And the city was San Francisco, and I had been out there working. And because of work schedules and travel schedules, I wasn't going home until a couple of days after Christmas. And I had just barely moved there, not really knowing anyone. But a few people told me about the Unitarian Church and how they were going to have needed volunteers to help serve Christmas dinner to the homeless. My first reaction was, well, you know, I don't really want to do that. I really want to sit here and feel sorry for myself. And so after a couple of times of just sitting there wallowing for about an hour, I recalled the story that my grandfather had told me and took some inspiration and decided, what do I have to lose? So I made my way to the Unitarian Church. And as I walked in, this person they called, I found later his name was Ben, but it should have been Claus because he was about 6 foot. He was as tall, as white as he was tall, and he had a big white beard. And he actually looked like Santa Claus. But he said, I'm glad you're here. Have you ever worked on a food line before? And I said, no. And he said, okay, well, you look like a mashed potato kind of guy, so. So he put me serving the mashed potatoes on the line. And for the next 5 hours, I had this incredible experience. As I sat there and connected with total strangers and connected eye to eye and heart to heart, and as they said, thank you and Merry Christmas. To me, that has been one of the most incredible experiences, Christmas memories that I hold dear in my life. And a lot of that came about because of a story that someone had told me that I gained some strength from, that I could remember and act upon. Now, each of us can think back of the stories in our life. And the sermon today is Tell Me a Story, because in our stories that we tell and others tell to us, we find a connection. We find strength. We find power. Many times we even find purpose. Now, sometimes in telling us stories, we might jump hastily to a conclusion, or we might not get the whole story. And there was a story told in UU World about 3 or 4 years ago in January about a young trapper father who had a 5-year-old son. And he lived out in the wilderness with his son, just he and his son. And a storm came up, and he recognized that he really needed to go out and get food, and he was really didn't know what to do. And so he decided that he would leave his son in the custody of his dog, which was very faithful to him. And he went out to hunt for food, and the storm came up, and he had to gain shelter in the trees. And so the next day he came back, and as he came up to the cabin, he noticed that the door was ajar. And as he went in, he found the furniture overturned. And then he found his dog with blood on his mouth. And as he looked, he couldn't find his son anywhere, and so he jumped to the conclusion that he thought he understood what had happened. The dog had gotten hungry, and the dog had killed his son for food. And so he immediately took his axe and killed the dog. And then as he sat there, he looked in the cabin trying to find some remains of his 5-year-old son, and he heard a cry come from under the bed. And he recognized that cry, and he ran to it and found and embraced his son. It was then that he realized quite hastily, as he looked in the far corner and found the body of the wolf, that the dog had killed the wolf to protect his son. And I share that story with you in the sense that I think many times in the telling of our stories, or sometimes in listening to them, we jump to a hasty conclusion without actually getting the facts. You know, stories are really a part of who we are. And I especially love the stories that we find in our history. And I've talked about some of them before, but in preparing for the sermon, I came across another one that I want to share with you. And this is a man called by the name of Thomas Porter. Now, Thomas Porter believes strongly that a preacher would come to him and be able to preach the doctrine that he believed in. And so he built a church on his property and waited. And people came and went, and they just weren't the right one. And after 10 years went by, and meanwhile, during this time, a man by the name of John Murray, who was in England, left his Calvinist religion and latched onto the belief of universal salvation, where all will be saved and God is a God of love, and he migrated over to America. Now, the ship that he was on ran aground, and the captain asked him if he would go ashore and just kind of look for some help. And he went ashore, and he looked for some food, and he was directed to the house of Thomas Porter. And Thomas Porter and him met, and, And he found out that he had been a preacher, and he invited him to preach at his church. And so news went out that this new preacher was coming by the name of John Murray to preach about salvation, to preach about God's love. And the Sunday came, and John Murray preached. And that day, the beginning of American Universalism was born. And this story has a lot of impact to us as Unitarian Universalists, but there's things that we can gain from it in the telling of this story. The fact that Thomas Porter never gave up in his belief, and he strongly believed that someone would come and show him the way. And I often think about us as Unitarian Universalists. You know, we just went through a horrendous election, and on the night, in the early morning hours, as I sat there in shock, my phone and my email went wild with texts from friends from all over the country. And the thing that impressed me the most as I sat there thinking about what we can do was the simple fact that as Unitarian Universalists, it's time to begin to tell our stories. It's time for us to step up to the plate and begin to go out into the community and share who we are and what we believe in. And that if we do that, I felt very strongly that we'd be able to lay a way in which other people could latch on to us and agree with us. Because as we look at our principles, our first principle, the worth and dignity, what a wonderful thing if we all believe that and live that. So in closing, I have one other story, and this is actually a true story. And the others were true also, but this is a true story that actually happened to me. And that is the fact that about a year ago, a woman came to Melissa and I, and she operates a women's shelter that have women that come there that are either fresh out of prison or they go there instead of going to prison. And these women have addiction issues. And they're young, they're old, they're middle-aged, so there's no real age limit on it. But the director really believed that what these women needed was some spiritual type of direction in their program to help them. And she didn't want to have a preacher come in there and preach religion. What she wanted was what she believed we had in Unitarian Universalists, was the fact that we would teach them about how to connect with themselves and how to form their own relationship. And so thus began a process of designing a series of workshops. And in the spring of this year, we launched that. And as I sat there and asked these women to write about their hopes, their dreams, their fears, it was amazing to me as they shared their stories of pain, their stories of struggle, their stories of trial. But what was even more amazing was their stories of hope. And we asked them to take some cardboard boxes and put in it the things that they wanted to rid their lives of, and on the outside, decorate it with the things of their hopes and dreams. And as one woman, middle-aged woman, began to share, she said that everything in her life, her family, her children, her husband, had been taken from her because of her choices. But this box was something that was hers, that represented a new beginning for her. And she wanted to take that box and put it by the side of her bed. And so each day she could be reminded of her vision, of her hopes, and of her dreams. I share that with you because working with these women left an impact in my life and also taught me that right here in our community of Kent, there are people that we can reach out to. There are people who need what we have here. who are desperately seeking for the same spirit that we feel here in community, the same love that we feel here in this community. And so what Lily challenged you to do, and I will further on that challenge, is write your story in 6 words. And maybe it won't be 6 words. Maybe it'll be 1 word, maybe it'll be 2 words. And then what we're going to do is we're going to post them. And we're going to put them up for the next week or two as a way of reminding us that each of us have our own stories, but collectively we have a story to tell. And that story is one of love, one of hope. And we, as Unitarian Universalists, can be the light that the world needs at this time. May it be so.
So the whale had completed its great journey to Pickerington, Ohio, and there was a huge celebration. The whole community came together and circled around this big pond and erected an enormous tail to tell the story of the whale. And the community sang together, so I ask you to sing after me. It goes like this. The whale has come. Her journey's done. Time to celebrate. Such a wonderful day. 'Cause we've been waiting such a long, long time for the day to come. For the whale to join the party, everybody shout. Let the word spread out. What a welcome home. It's been a long, long road. And now our home is your home today. Our home is your home, you humpback whale. Now what are you whale gonna teach us? What is the road you're gonna lead us on? How is your beauty gonna reach us? How are we ever gonna learn your song? I wonder if the whale might change us. I wonder if the journey goes on and on. Maybe the whale will be famous. Maybe the world is gonna sing her song. The whale has come. Her journey's done. Time to celebrate. Such a wonderful day. Oh, 'cause we've been waiting such a long, long time for the day to come. For the whale to join the party, everybody shout. Let the word spread out. What a welcome home. It's been a long, long road. And now our home today, our home is your home, you humpback whale, you humpback whale, you humpback whale.
Reverence the highest. Have patience with the lowest. Let this day's performance of the meanest duty be thy religion. Are the stars too distant? Pick up the pebbles that lie at thy feet, and from it learn the all. And please, please begin to tell your story. Amen.